Hi, this is Meg Malone, the Vermont Edition digital producer. We've edited down this episode of Vermont Edition.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. One of my favorite ways to add a little holiday spice to my life around this time of year is to take an orange and poke about a million cloves into it and then leave it in my kitchen. It reminds me of childhood and holidays and warm winter moments. There are other spices that say winter or Christmas or holiday spirit, too. Maybe vanilla, cinnamon, cardamom. What about for you? What spices feel really seasonal and warm and wonderful to you right now? And how do you use them in your cooking beyond just leaving an orange in your kitchen? We're going to talk about all kinds of spices today, and we'll give a little extra love to those scents and flavors that mark the holiday season. I'm joined now by Al Getz. He's a former spice buyer for McCormick & Company, whose labels you probably know well from your spice aisle. Al spent 40 years in the business and identified himself as a recently retired expert on spice procurement. Al, I'm so pleased to have you on the show. Welcome.
Well, thank you, and hello and good afternoon to everybody.
Do you have a favorite holiday spice, or is that an unfair question to ask somebody for whom spice is a career?
Yeah, very unfair. I like all the ones you just mentioned, then some additional ones, too, on top of that. I guess what I do like about it is the fact that most of these spices are what we call the sweet spices, and they certainly go well with things like pumpkin pie, and obviously very good with other dishes that we traditionally have around this time of the year.
You said you like all the ones I mentioned, like vanilla, cinnamon, cloves, and some others. What are some others that you really like?
Well, you missed a major one, nutmeg. For all those, you're going to have
nutmeg.
Eggnog and want to grind a little bit on top of the eggnog. That's one of the spices. Also, aniseed is a sweet spice, a very nice one, and one called star anise, a little bit more unusual for us. But it also is very sweet and has that strong licorice flavor, too.
You like the anise. The licorice flavor, to me, sometimes I can handle it, and sometimes it's like, oof, no.
Yeah. Well, it's also nice. In Turkey, they use aniseed for making a liquor-type after-dinner drink or aperitif during the summer months called raki, and that's very good, too.
And Al, we got a note from Christina who says, I love nutmeg and cardamom especially and add them along with cinnamon and vanilla to my oatmeal all year round. Sometimes I think about the lengths people went through in history to find and trade spices, and I'd love to know more about that and the allure that they held. Now, we could do a whole hour on the spice trade and history. Yeah, really. And I'm sure you've done a whole career of knowing about this stuff. But is there a story of one spice that you'd like to take us back in time and look at?
Yes, cinnamon would be a great one to talk about right now. Because of the fact that it's this spice particularly goes way, way back in time. You know, you think of the Age of Discovery with Christopher Columbus and many of the other modern explorers. And you think of the Age of Discovery and all the new routes they found through sailing there and finding ways to get to the East Indies or to India to find the various spices. But long before that, the Egyptians were buying spices. And how did they get them? And particularly cinnamon. It wasn't grown in Africa. It strictly is grown in Indonesia and southern China and Vietnam and also Sri Lanka, those four areas. But most of it was coming out of Indonesia. And it was actually, you know, going back thousands of years. And the first recorded history of it is with the Egyptian pharaoh queen Hatshepsut, is one I have a difficulty pronouncing. But anyway, at her actual mortuary temple opposite where all the kings are buried in Luxor, there's actually several tablets which explain in detail that in 1493 BC, she sent an exploratory group of boats of soldiers down the Red Sea, actually to a place called the Land of Punt, which is really the Somalia and Ethiopia, in search of spices and myrrh and frankincense and anything else they could find. And they were very successful. They came back with a boatload of cinnamon and myrrh and frankincense and monkeys and other things that they found along the way. Why? Because they loved to burn cinnamon back then as incense, and also in the embalming process, it was very important because it has antibacterial qualities that made it part of the embalming process. So that started, in basically 1392 or 93, rather. And so that goes way back. But long before that, it was known about the cinnamon root, which basically started in Asia, again in Indonesia, primarily between Sumatra and Java. And they would had developed these rafts that later had sails, and then they also put outrigger canoes on in order that they could actually handle the high seas and go across the Indian Ocean, for example, to the eastern side of Africa and deliver the goods there. And then they went on for trade all throughout Africa and up into Europe or whatever.
Yeah, so for people who think of the spice trade as mostly a thing that incorporated European explorers, the spice trade was going on long before.
Absolutely. That's quite a history.
When I think about cinnamon, you know, now I'm picturing either ground cinnamon or the sort of cinnamon bark, you know, the curled up little stick of cinnamon that you can shove into your mulled cider. What does cinnamon look like when it's growing?
Well, it's the outer bark of a tree. The inner pulp of the tree has no flavor whatsoever. So it's all in that outer bark, and depending on the age of the tree, that bark thickness can be anywhere from a 16th of an inch all the way up to a quarter of an inch to 3/8 of an inch in thickness. And usually the older the tree, the higher level of cinnamic aldehyde, which is what gives it burning cinnamon flavor that's in the bark. And, for example, in Indonesia, which is the workhorse, the cinnamon comes from central Sumatra up in the highland volcanic mountainous areas. And a lot of it still grows wild today, and a lot of it is farmed. But the trees there are basically cut down at different levels of age, and depending on what that is will determine what the level of cinnamon flavor is.
Hmm.
And while I'm just mentioning real quickly, I mentioned before the four origins of cinnamon. Obviously, Indonesia, Sri Lanka is the second largest. They produce a lot of very low volatile cinnamon because they only allow the roots to send out short saplings that are maybe an inch and a half thick. And so the bark is very, very thin. It has a very mild cinnamon flavor, but it's interesting because it finishes with a citrus flavor note to it. And that primarily is used in Mexico in making the famous mole that's used in Mexico in everyday eating there. And then you've got two other origins, China and the southern part. They grow two different types of cinnamon, one called Sikiang and the other called Tung Hing. They're relatively low volatile oil cinnamons, whereas in Indonesia it's anywhere from basically 1% all the way up to 3.5%, 4%. But the highest cinnamon comes out of Vietnam. And they grow a relatively small amount compared to the other origins, but this cinnamon has the highest level of volatile oil or the highest burning sensation. You think of those red cinnamon candy drops that you chew on, and they're just so strong and cinnamon and burning hot to your mouth. Well, that's the way the Vietnamese cinnamon is. And so that's used in a lot of our specialty high gourmet cinnamons that we use. And it's also used in the cosmetic industry as for dealing with putting in skin creams and so forth.
Hmm. You know, it's interesting. We got a note from BHA who wrote to say a few years ago, I was in Illinois and a friend took me to a spice store in Naperville. I had no idea how many kinds of cinnamon there are. Some are really potent. By the time I got done smelling them all, I couldn't tell one from the other. So I got some Vietnamese cinnamon, quite good and much stronger than the generic bottled stuff from the grocery store. And, you know, that's just what you were saying, Al, that the Vietnamese cinnamon is much stronger. So if you just go to the store and from whatever company you prefer, you're buying your bottle that just says cinnamon, is that going to be a single origin or a blend of the different origins, or what are you likely to get?
There probably are some blends out there. My company didn't. It was primarily Indonesian was the main workhorse for the industry because Vietnamese, no way could they produce enough for all of our needs. But also, they have different applications as to how they use the Vietnamese. Because it was very strong and burning, a lot of people actually don't like that versus the Indonesian, which has any levels between 1 and, say, 3.25%. Usually 2.75 to 3% is an excellent flavor profile for the Indonesian cinnamon.
Listeners, again, we're talking spices today. We're looking at cinnamon now. We're going to talk about some other seasonal spices. And if you have any questions about any kind of spice, you can call 800-639-2211 or post a comment on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Al, in order to harvest the cinnamon, does the tree have to be killed, or is there a way to harvest it and continue growing that tree? I mean, given that it's coming from a tree, it must take a little while to grow.
Oh, yeah. Most of the trees, probably the youngest in Indonesia, for example, they'd harvest them would be in the 5 to 7 year range, but most of them are probably in the 10 to 15 year range when they're harvested. I would say about 60% of the trees, once they're cut down, will regrow, just like you cut down a white birch tree in New England and new sprouts come out because the tree is still alive with the root system. And that's pretty much the same way with the Indonesian cinnamon trees. They really will continue to live, and they'll send out new saplings that turn into branches and new trees.
So they sort of cut it back, and then a new tree will grow.
Well, they cut the whole tree down.
But leave the roots.
Yeah, and it will definitely continue to grow.
We have a note from Andrea who says, my mom used to make braided cardamom bread with candied fruit for Christmas gifts and, of course, a bit for us for Christmas morning. I always enjoyed it, and I'd love to know if this is a holiday spice or just, as so many things were in our home, one family's tradition. And, of course, any other history about cardamom.
I do put cardamom in the kind of the holiday seasoning pack, but it's not that well used. It's actually one of my favorite spices that's really underutilized. What's so unique about cardamom, you can open up a bottle of it and the whole room will just smell of it, and it has a lovely aroma.
Depends on if you like it or not, I suppose,
yeah,
then, whether that's
exactly
a good thing.
Right. Yeah, I know. I like to put it in coffee in the coffee maker at home, and it's okay the first day with my wife, but after that, it's like, oh, we got to clean that thing out. You know, it really is about how well you like cardamom or not. And but it's a very unique plant, a tropical plant, grows up in the highlands, up in the mountains, has to grow under an overhead canopy of forest. And beautiful sprouts come out of the ground with all these feathered leaves on it. And down the bottom, there's these little pods that are suddenly developing, and they have to, you know, they ripen at different times, so the local farmers have to go through the fields every day looking for the ripe pods, and there's like a 5-month period where they're all ripening, and, you know, every day there's some new ones that need to be harvested and others that have yet to fully mature.
Yeah, I really like the flavor of cardamom too, but do you think that's one that people sort of like or don't like because it's less familiar, so it's sort of a less familiar scent that people have gotten accustomed to? Or is it really a stronger flavor than some of the other spices we're talking about, where people really do have a little bit of a polarized feeling on it?
Well, I think it's more a case people just don't realize it. It's a relatively small volume. It's very big in the Middle East area for making coffee and using it there. In the United States, in limited areas, you know, it has a following in making cookies, usually in the sort of the Scandinavian areas. But I know it's good. My wife is the cook of the family, and she has put it in pumpkin pie many times, and it really adds a nice additional flavor to pumpkin pie.
Yeah, my favorite was Virgin's Laundry under its previous incarnation. Julianne the baker would make a cardamom bun that was just absolutely to die for. And, you know, that spiced sugar with cardamom was pretty amazing.
Well, I want to try that. I haven't had that one. That sounds great.
It's fabulous. Let's go to Melanie, who's calling in from Chappaqua, New York. Hi, Melanie. Go right ahead.
Hi. How are you today?
Great. How about you?
Well, I have two comments about cinnamon, and then I also have a little, you were asking about what spices remind you of Christmas time, winter.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say Vicks Vapor Rub.
Oh, geez. From
my childhood. But back to cinnamon. My husband loves putting cinnamon in his coffee and his cappuccino.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard about healing properties for cinnamon. So that's the first comment I wanted to make and ask about. And then the second is, can I grow my own cinnamon tree at home?
If you have a big greenhouse, yeah.
But not, you can't grow it just in your normal house if you've got...
No, it's a tropical plant. I mean, I guess you could inside, but I don't think it would do very well because it's used to tons of rain and very moist, humid environment.
All right, so maybe put it in your basement and take out the dehumidifier in the summer, and maybe you could grow something.
No, it wouldn't work there either.
What about her question, though, about the healing properties of cinnamon? And more and more, I mean, this has always been true, but especially right now in this moment we're in, I feel like there are people sort of coming back to what they see as the healing properties of various spices. And we could talk about turmeric and other ones, but what about cinnamon?
Well, it's huge. And again, we could have a whole week show on this, about all the potential here behind the various spices. And I'm a big believer, and you mentioned turmeric. I take a half a teaspoon every day, and it's made a huge difference. I mean, it's anti-inflammatory. But with cinnamon, they've had a fair amount of research. And what they're finding is it has had an impact on basically balancing your blood levels or whatever. You know, your blood sugar, rather, not blood levels, and has an impact on people that, you know, could have a favorable impact on people that have diabetes, or those people who don't realize that they may be having a problem with diabetes. It could head off them having diabetes or whatever. So that's the biggest thing that they found with cinnamon so far. Yeah, it has antimicrobial aspects to it, but there are other spices that are stronger at that than this one.
We got a note from Brian who says, I use cinnamon and vanilla all year. I rarely use nutmeg unless I'm baking something for someone else. So clearly not a nutmeg fan on his own, says Brian. We're talking about spices today. I'd love to know, listeners, what questions you have. Is there a certain spice that really says winter to you, or Christmas, or Hanukkah, or anything else that you're thinking about at this time of year? Vicks VapoRub was a new one to me, but, you know, maybe
well,
there's
definitely
some...
not a spice. Maybe
no,
you have a seasoning or flavor
that's
to it.
Right.
A synthetic flavor that has some spice relationship.
That's right. We're mostly thinking of spices that say the holiday to you. But hey, you know, you can interpret that how you want. Today, we're talking about the history, economics, and fun of spices with Al Goetz, a former spice buyer from McCormick & Company. We've been talking about the spices, but Al impressed upon us before the show started that he's not a chef. So also joining us now to go over some of the wonderful ways to incorporate spices into your cooking, particularly some holiday-friendly spices and recipes, is cookbook author and writer Maria Lisa Calta. Maria Lisa, nice to have you back on the show.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
Do you have a favorite flavor? I mean, Al and I both agreed that cardamom is lovely, but some people are not fans. What about for you? Any favorite winter or holiday spices?
Well, I think I might be the gingerbread queen. And I love all the spices that go into gingerbread. Cinnamon, allspice, cloves. Not a huge fan of nutmeg, like Brian, I think, who called in. But I do use it when called for. I usually put in about half the amount called for. But I've also seen gingerbread made some myself with star anise, white pepper, five spice powder. So there's interesting ways to kind of... you know, change it up a little bit, even for a traditional treat like a gingerbread cookie or cake like gingerbread.
Maria Lisa, you mentioned allspice, so I'm going to throw a question here at you that Nicole posted saying, here's the deal. A friend recently gave me a quite good-sized bag of fresh, whole allspice kernels, if kernel is the right word. I often use allspice in various recipes like pumpkin pie, but most recipes rarely call for more than about a quarter or a half a teaspoon. I've even started dropping a kernel in my morning pot of tea, but do you have any good ideas to use the allspice? There's a lot of it, and it's great, but I would hate for it to get old.
You know, I think you could put it in a sock and then use it to hit any intruder over the head, maybe. I don't have an idea for that much allspice. Again, it's kind of strong, like cloves. Cloves, yeah. Usually they're asking for a pinch or an eighth of a teaspoon, and allspice is the same, and I just don't have a good use for it.
I like that Nicole is putting it in his tea, you know, a whole allspice kernel. Al, is kernel the right word? What would you call the whole allspice?
I think
allspice?
It's a berry.
Yeah, that's what it is, a berry, allspice.
Well, so one of the questions here that comes up then is how long can you keep something like those berries? VPR's own Emily Corwin posed this question saying, my family has a long-running disagreement over whether and when spices go bad. Whenever I try to cook at my parents' house, I discover essential spices missing. My mom is always tossing them out. I think they're good for years and years. I'm right? Al, she's wrong, right?
Well, it depends. If it's whole berries like peppercorns or allspice, and they're properly kept out of the sunlight and in an area that's cool, not next to the stove and in the direct sunlight, they'll last for a long time. And the key is you haven't broken the shell, the outer shell open, which would release the volatile oils and the flavor components and cause it to disintegrate rapidly. Now, with ground spices, it's a different story because that's been done. And it's been, you know, once it's ground, it's on this downhill curve. So it's very important to keep things, out in the proper location so they won't be too hot and not exposed to a lot of sunlight.
So the proper location would be what, like inside a cabinet where it's going to be dark?
But not next to the stove. Also, depending on what the item's in, like chilies and paprika, they are really difficult to maintain for the long haul. So I keep them in the refrigerator, and that extends their shelf life for a long time.
When you say, Al, that ground spices, you know, they are really, they're the ones that you especially need to be cautious of using quickly. What is the shelf life? I mean, like weeks, months, days?
Oh, no. You can, if they're properly kept, they can go for 6 to 12 months easy.
Even the ground spices?
Yeah. Exactly. But again, you have to, like I said, you have to properly keep them stored.
And something like Nichols allspice berries, those might be able to last him for a while?
Oh, yeah. No problem there at all.
Okay. So, Nichols, you don't need to resort to the sock yet. It looks like you've got maybe a year or more before you have to worry too much. Maria Lisa, what about cinnamon? What advice do you have for cooking with cinnamon that might, you know, we all know how to, you know, what the smell of cinnamon is like, but what should we be doing with it?
I don't know what we should be doing with it. I was going to say, as for allspice, the other thing that occurred to me for Brian is to, if he wants to investigate cooking some Caribbean cuisine, because I think it's a prominent spice used in, like, jerk chicken.
That's correct.
And those kinds of recipes. So he might want to look up some of those. As for cinnamon, I think the caller who said her husband puts it in coffee, I think that's wonderful. You will find it often. I think that trend may have started with the barista who sprinkles it on your latte or your cappuccino. I like to, when I'm making a cinnamon cookie or something that's heavily cinnamon, I often put in a little pinch of white pepper just to kind of, I don't know, I think it complements it. White pepper is quite spicy. It's quite hot. And I think cinnamon pairs very nicely with hot food, other hot spices, cayenne, white pepper, black pepper. So, you know, when you're making your favorite cinnamon cookie or gingerbread cookie, you might just put in a pinch of something hot. Mm. And it won't make it taste too spicy, but it just, I think it brings out the flavor.
We have a caller in here while we've been talking about allspice and Nichols' question about allspice berries. Brenda has called in from Bridgewater. Hi, Brenda. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to just say that I make a couple of drinks, which we call tea, and I use allspice berries in a fresh ginger tea, which I also sometimes put in some red, I often put in some red pepper flakes, and so it's about an inch of fresh ginger sliced into about 2 quarts of water with about 6 of the allspice berries, and just let it deep until it almost starts to reduce. Put in the juice of a fresh lemon and some honey to your taste, and it is so good, and it makes you feel good when you have a scratchy throat. Mm. I also make a black tea chai in which I use cinnamon, anise, whole anise, and the cardamom pods that I just gently crack open. So I let them steep with the tea until it's to the blackness of my liking, and then put in the milk and warm it all up together and sweeten it with honey. And both of those drinks are incredibly delicious, and I love the spiciness.
Ooh, Brenda, it sounds wonderful. A nice chai with anise, cinnamon, and cardamom, and an allspice berry and a ginger brew sounds really fabulous. Thank you for sharing those. Maria Lisa, any drinks that you think are particularly wonderful and warming at this time of year that incorporate spices?
Well, I mean, there's, you know, mulled wine, mulled cinnamon, mulled cider is wonderful. And
I don't think you have to get too fancy. I think you can just, you know, toss a couple of cinnamon sticks into your cider and slice up some oranges and lemons, and that makes a just a wonderful warming drink. I'm sure there are uses in cocktails, but I'm not a big cocktail maker, so I don't know enough about that. And, of course, mulled wine, which usually requires some sugar in it, so I wouldn't use your, you know, best bottle of red for that. but, again, some cinnamon, a few cloves, some citrus fruit in a pot of wine with a little bit of sugar or honey is really very warming and delicious.
Maria Lisa, leave us with one other thought on cooking with spices at this time of year.
Well, you know, this is a time of year when we tend to go back to our traditions, and we make the cookies our mothers or our grandmothers made, or our fathers and grandfathers. And I think that's fine. You don't have to get too experimental at Christmas. but if you want to just add a little bit of something, you can, look around in your spice cabinet, open up the jars, smell things, taste them, see what you think might go very well in some old traditional recipe, and give it a try. As long as you don't use too much, you're probably not going to do too much damage. And again, those flavors, if you like licorice, the anise and fennel seeds are wonderful. All sorts of chili peppers are wonderful. There's lots of spice mixes now that are interesting to try. So I think you could take a traditional recipe and just add a little bit of something to make it your own.
I love that idea.
Or you can just stick with the way it has pleased people for generations and enjoy.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with tradition most of the time.
I'm a big
some
fan.
Of the time. Maria Lisa Calta is a cookbook author and freelance writer based here in Vermont. Maria Lisa, nice to talk with you. Happy holidays.
Thank you.
Andrea's on the line with us from Middlebury. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, Jane. Just touching base on the holidays, and one of my favorite traditions every year that I make with my daughters and my son is making tutières, allspice, cinnamon, nutmeg, and a little secret ingredient that I can't tell you over the phone, but all those famous traditions just bring back that smell, and that's all I have to say. It's just wonderful.
Well, I appreciate it, even though you won't tell me your secret ingredient. Maybe I'll have to come over. Maybe then I'll find out what the ingredient is. But thank you for that. Yes, those meat pies, yum, with all those spices. Betty's on the line with us from Rutland. Hi, Betty. What about you? Spices?
Hi.
Holidays?
I use spices a lot and a lot of different ones. But I can tell you that adding cinnamon, nutmeg, and allspice to chili with chili peppers and so forth is awesome.
What do you think it brings out, Betty, when you put in those spices?
It brings out all the flavors, but it's not, and I tend to make the chili rather warm, so it calms it down a bit.
Well, it
but
sounds
it really,
wonderful.
And the aroma is to die for.
Betty, I bet. It sounds great. I'll be over to your house after I go to Andrea's for the meat pies. Thank you for sharing that. Al, what about these pairings? I mean, so Maria Lisa mentioned the pairing of cinnamon and white pepper, and here's Betty talking about chili and adding some of these spices that you think of sometimes as more on the sweet side, like the cinnamon, the allspice, and the nutmeg. How do you think about spice pairings? And certainly that's something we see more and more in the spice aisle, too, are these spice mixes or you know, blends.
Absolutely. Just with the chili, I know I've had chili before with cinnamon in it, and I think what it does, it just adds a little depth of kind of smoothing the flavors out and adding a little extra warmth to the chili product. Again, I'm not expert in all the blending and seasonings. McCormick has full-time R&D people working in the labs and constantly putting together new spice seasonings. And I'll just mention one briefly, like the Montreal steak seasoning. It's spectacular. I tried it once, and I cannot eat a steak without putting it on every time. So, I mean, there are amazing things that can be done by combining spices, and maybe not just spices, but some of the other food and flavor components or whatever.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, though, because let me interrupt you here to read you a question from Elaine in Winooski, who wants to know, what's the difference between an herb and a spice?
There you go. Well, you know, actually, just for the fun of it, the way we used to do it, we'd break it down into five different categories. The first was the herb category, then the sweet spices, then the savory spices, things like black and white pepper, then the seeds. There's probably a dozen different seeds like celery seed, coriander, cumin, and then finally the capsicums, which is primarily paprika and the chili products, the hot heat products. But basically, if you look at the definitions, an herb is basically a small plant that grows leaves and the leaves add flavor. And examples are oregano, marjoram, savory, thyme, rosemary. There's so many of the herbs. But they're all basically plants that grow in temperate zones. They're most all perennials. And the small leaves that they produce on the plant, the majority of the plant, all have flavor. And that's what we use in seasoning and flavoring our foods. A spice is different. It also has, it's not just the same type of plant. It can be all different types of plants. Like we just talked about cinnamon being a tree. And nutmeg and mace is the fruit of a tree versus the bark of a tree. And what's unique about the nutmeg tree, it produces not only the nutmeg, but also mace. If you look at it, it's about the size of a large apricot. And the first quarter inch around the innards is basically a fleshy, very bitter nutmeg product that usually just disintegrates and dries up. But some people have started making jams and jellies out of it. And then there's this red tissue. That's the mace. When it sun dries, it goes from a bright red basically to a brown orange color. And that completely goes around the nutmeg, which is a hard shell. And inside the hard shell is a nutmeg, which is maybe anywhere from 3/4 of an inch to an inch, kind of around. Sometimes it can be oval. But that's actually the seed for the nutmeg tree. But you have to break off that hard outer shell. Okay, and some other examples. It can be, you know, the fruit of the pepper vine. We get three different spice products from the same vine. If the farmer harvests the immature green pepper berries and places them in saltwater brine, they remain green. And they're used in fancy steak sauces, primarily in Europe, but you see more and more of it in the U.S. If they let the green berries go to full maturity, so they're just about ready to turn color like a yellow or orange, and harvest then, they're placed out in the sun for 7 to 10 days, and it's black pepper as you know it. And then lastly, if they let the pepper berries stay on the vine for the longest time, they actually turn color to yellow, red, orange, kind of. And then they harvest those. And the seed has gotten so large, there's actually a thin layer of gelatin underneath the skin. And then they place that in burlap bags and put it in a river or pond or swamp. And then they take it out and they put it in baskets because that outer skin has disintegrated over 10 days to 2 weeks. And what's left is the white pulp of the pepper. And that's where white pepper comes from. So you got peppercorns. And then you have, for example, vanilla is a bean. Every flower on the vine, it's a tropical vine. It's actually an orchid. It's the only orchid of 25,000 identified orchids in the world that actually has an edible fruit, and that's the vanilla bean. And what's fascinating is every vanilla vine, it grows like an orchid, so the roots don't have to, they're in the soil, but it's really more than just the roots that's driving the growth of that vine. And it's very big compared to most orchids. But what's fascinating is every flower has to be hand-pollinated in order to create a vanilla bean, no matter where in the world. When it was originally discovered in Mexico, the vanilla beans were wild-growing, and we discovered, not we, but the Spanish discovered it from running into the Aztec Indians, and they were presented with probably a coconut cup filled up with water, chocolate, sugar, some corn flour, and vanilla. And the first Westerner tasted vanilla that way. But in the wild, the vanilla vines couldn't produce enough vanilla beans for this huge appetite in Europe. So they started taking vines all over the world, in the tropical world. And they actually went to a place called Bourbon, which was an island owned by the Bourbon Kings. It's now called Reunion. And they planted it there, and it grew beautifully. Tons of leaves, lots of flowers, but no beans. And they forgot the fact that in nature, there was a bee that was basically pollinating all the flowers in Mexico and Central America. And so when they took the vines out, there was no bee that had developed over a million years or whatever. And so finally, after years of producing no beans, they figured out that they had to hand pollinate it. So today, no matter where the vanilla is grown in the world, every flower has to be hand pollinated. So you can imagine Madagascar, the largest vanilla producing country in the world, there's over 80,000 farmers that go through their vines during the flowering time, making sure that they pollinate every flower. The flowers come out before sun up, and if you haven't pollinated by noon, you've lost it. So there's an urgency to do that. So
it's kind of amazing, and boy, am I grateful to every worker who has ever pollinated a vanilla plant on my behalf. We're talking spices with longtime spice buyer from McCormick & Company, Al Goetz. He recently retired from the gig, so he has some time to talk spices with us, and he's here in Vermont and not traveling the world. Ingrid wrote a note saying, my parents were Danish and German. My mother did not like cinnamon and only used cardamom in her holiday cooking and cake making. As the only member of my family born in the United States, I wanted to follow American traditions and always wanted her to use cinnamon. Now, as an aging adult, I appreciate the subtlety of cardamom and appreciate how well it works with the less sweet European cookie and cake recipes that were passed down to me. I also want to add that I always use fresh grated nutmeg in place of powdered, and I add the spice to many recipes, even when not called for. They sell little metal graters everywhere for nutmeg. And Janice in Danville says, was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the shortage of vanilla. Also, are there spices that are in danger of becoming scarce due to global warming? Al?
Yes. I was afraid somebody was going to ask that question about vanilla. The problem is Madagascar has become the largest vanilla producer in the world. It's a very difficult country. It's one of the few countries that still has bubonic plague, believe it or not. And just government-wise, it's been very difficult there. But it is, the people there are really lovely, the farmers, and they have so little. But they do a very good job in growing vanilla. The problem is the prices had gotten way too high back in the early 2004. And as a result, the prices went sky high. Like right now, to buy a kilo of vanilla, I believe is around, and I'm away from the market now, I believe is around $600 a kilo for vanilla, which is in the old days when the Madagascar actually had a quota system and they regulated the price for years was always around much lower levels, around $70 to $100 a kilo, which is much more workable. Everybody in the system makes money at that level. Problem now is the price is sky high. So what they're doing is they're increasing their crop by 25%. Well, let me just take a step back. The last time this happened, they doubled their crop size. And other origins like Uganda, Indonesia, India also became very active in it. But the problem is when you plant vanilla, it takes approximately 4 years of full maturity. So during that four-year period, when everyone's planting like crazy, the prices stay high. And then suddenly the world is awash in vanilla, which is what happened. And then the prices came crashing back down to very, very extreme low levels. The other alternate origin said, I'm out of here. I can't do this. It just doesn't make sense. So the cycle starts all over again. And what then kicks it off every once in a while, Madagascar gets a cyclone, and they had one this year, usually before the prices really take off. They had one a year ago that hit the key part of the vanilla growing area. So they use that as an excuse to start really pushing the price up. But that's where we are now. But one of the things I did before leaving was to start working with some of the alternate origins to really put some great programs in place. And we have some unbelievable things underway in Indonesia and India. In addition to working in Madagascar to help the people there to produce it in a more sustainable manner. And so, and that's the whole key today is sustainability and all these different origins. So even when the market dives to the low point again, it's still sustainable. And if it does that, then it'll keep the market in a much more stable place for a long time. So it's probably a couple more years before we're out of this high vanilla area as the other origins are rapidly trying to come up to speed.
You know, you mentioned sustainability and certainly the stability of the product is part of that. But, you know, we've also seen this idea of sustainability and it's, you know, it's sort of a catchphrase. So it can be used in many different ways. But, you know, the idea of making sure farmers in developing countries countries are getting a livable wage and that the crop is being grown sustainably for the environment. And certainly that's not across the board, but we see it in similar food industries like coffee and chocolate. Where does that stand with the spice trade in terms of making sure that fair wages are being paid and that the crop is being grown in a way that benefits the environment?
Yeah, it's much more complex in the spice industry. It first started with the cocoa end, and their big problem was child labor in the Ivory Coast. I can remember getting a call from one of the large chocolate manufacturers saying, well, what are we doing about sustainability? And this must have been at least 20 years ago. But that kind of initiated the program. And then it spread from cocoa to coffee and tea and other areas. But those commodities are pretty uniform, so you can develop a program in one country and transport that to the next country, and it's similar a commodity that you're dealing with. Whereas with us, we've got 40 spices, culinary spices and herbs coming from about 40 different countries. So we definitely are putting together a good a base grassroots sustainability program, but just because of the complexity, it'll take a while for us to get there. And not as quick. Well, it's taken a while for the cocoa people and the coffee people to get there, but they've done a very good job, and that's where we're headed to. And we have excellent programs in place, and we're actually starting out primarily on our major iconic spices is where we're focusing the most.
Let's go to John, who's calling from Milton. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi, folks.
Hi.
Just a couple things. Your holiday spicing foods, my favorite is ginger snap cookies.
Mm.
I make a number of different kinds of ginger snaps with a number of different spices. I mean, obviously ginger and cinnamon are the core of them, but I've added allspice and cardamom and nutmeg and vary the mix a little bit, and they always come out really good. And then the other one that I'm a huge user of spices with is I do about 50 different kinds of pickles. In the summer and fall, and those are all my holiday gifts. And I've used everything from allspice and cardamom and ginger and cinnamon and coriander and pepper and all different kinds of them. But my question is I know a lot of these spices are tropical plants. Is there a possibility of cultivating them here in Vermont?
What do you think? Anything that we could grow here in Vermont? I know saffron is being experimented with.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that works out in the long run. Basically, obviously, during the summer months, you can grow all the herbs up here. But when it comes to the tropical spices, that's the difficult part up here. It would be extremely difficult. Yes, you can grow vanilla in a greenhouse, but there's a lot of disease factors and cost factors you have to take into account.
So, not likely to see a ton of that. Well, Al Goetz, I really appreciate you coming on the show today, sharing your love and knowledge about spices and really getting us in the mood to do some cooking with especially some holiday spices. Al, thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It was great to be here.
Al Goetz is a former spice buyer from McCormick & Company and recently retired.